This podcast discusses topics involving human death. Listener discretion is advised. My name is Ivy, and welcome to the Taphophile Diaries. A taphophile, also sometimes called a tombstone tourist, is defined as an individual who has a passion for and enjoyment of cemeteries, epitaphs, gravestone rubbing, photography, art, and history of deaths. So, if this sounds like you, you might just be a taphophile. Episode 3, The Old Stonecutter. Today, I'm going to talk about a rather mysterious figure in the world of funerary art. A very niche topic, but this is a very niche podcast, so it works. If you've ever been to an old New England cemetery, you are probably familiar with the classic memento mori art style. Memento mori is Latin, which roughly translates to remember that you have to die. It is a blunt reminder that death awaits us all, and it is often accompanied with another Latin phrase, hora fugit, or fugit hora, meaning time is fleeting. The art used to represent such ideas usually contains skulls, often with crossbones and hourglasses, and feathered wings. This imagery acts as reminders that we have to make the most of our time while we are here, as each and every one of us will eventually meet the same fate. In New England, this art style and sentiment came over with early settlers from England, with this art also being common in old cemeteries across the pond. But the Puritans who settled here in New England and brought it with them did make some changes to it, creating a new, unique style. Puritans were English Protestants whose goal was to, essentially, purify the Church of England via eliminating the aspects of Catholicism that were being adopted. So when they first came over to North America seeking religious freedom, they, of course, brought their strong religious beliefs with them, which included a more simple lifestyle in terms of day-to-day duties, how they dressed, what their hobbies were, and also how they decorated their headstones. Because for these Puritan settlers, death was all too common. Whether it was the harsh cold winters they endured, failed crops and dying livestock, sickness and disease that were rampant in their communities, their own impending death was something they had no choice but to contemplate. And this relationship that these Puritans had with their own morality is reflected in the simplistic memento mori art styles used to decorate their headstones. By the mid-18th century or mid-1700s, the demand for stone carvers for their headstones was high enough that carving schools began to pop up. And although it wasn't considered a fine art, by the late 19th century, the uniqueness of the memento mori art style, which evolved in Puritan New England, would mean that some cemeteries, in a sense, almost acted like museums as we began to study this very folk art style that they became known for. One historian, Richard Meyer, words this perfectly, describing these cemeteries as, and I quote, "outdoor, spatially delineated repositories of cultural artifacts." So far, researchers today have managed to identify approximately 300 stone carvers in New England who fulfilled this demand. But when discussing this headstone art style that so many of us taphophiles know and love, there is one artist in particular that we have to talk about. But we don't know his name. He simply went by the Old Stonecutter, or the Stonecutter of Charleston. He was a master craftsman who really set the bar for most headstone art in the Boston area. In the Farber Headstone Collection, they have accredited headstones to this craftsman as early as 1625 and as late as 1718, But these are estimates, and it's possible that some of the later headstones had been carved by him prior to his death and then sold off and used after. In fact, he is also accredited as being the creator of the Death's Head symbol, which consists of a skull with feathered wings, which you will see on a lot of New England headstones from the 1600s and early 1700s. We believe that this imagery of a skull with wings could signify the physical death of our body and spiritual regeneration, because the Puritans, who these were largely carved for, tended to avoid Christ-like symbology on their headstones. So while other Christians were often putting crosses or angels and cherubs on their headstones, the Puritans weren't, and this Death's Head symbol seemed perfect for them. It's also possible that over time, the meaning behind the symbol of the Death's Head became less significant as people just recognized it as popular funerary art and chose it for that reason alone. Hi, it's me, Ivy. I'm actually in the middle of editing this episode right now, and I'm recording this insert on my phone. I want to clarify that, of course, not every single Death's Head symbol on New England headstones was carved by this old stonecutter. He did have at least a couple of apprentices that we know of, but he is essentially the creator of it and who popularized it. As for how we know a headstone or Death's Head was carved by this particular unnamed stonecutter, we can confidently determine this by analyzing strikingly similar styles and details from headstones in the same areas and same time period, with each artist's unique takes and techniques acting as their calling card. Some also have what are essentially signatures that they may leave on headstones. And there is a symbol that the old stonecutter would carve into their works. It kind of resembles a little star with a swirl attached to it. So if this stonecutter was so prolific, so revolutionary for funerary art and sought after during his time, and the literal creator of the famous iconic Death's Head symbol that all of us cemetery lovers know, why don't we know his name? Well, he was so prolific for his time that people didn't even have to use his name. If someone wrote about him, they simply had to refer to him as the old stonecutter or something similar, and people were just expected to know precisely who they were talking about. Like today, we sometimes refer to a celebrity by a nickname or reference to one of their famous shows or movies, and people just know who you're talking about. Of course, this has made it a pain to try and identify who the old stonecutter was when no one actually seemed to record his name, at least not that we have found yet. One man, Timothy Riordan, author of The Stonecutter of Boston, An Examination of His Work and a Hypothesis Concerning His Identity, speculates that this mysterious celebrity stonecutter is one Elias Grice, who died in 1684 and is buried in the Granary Burial Ground across from King's Chapel Burying Ground in Boston, Massachusetts. Their life and the year of their death does line up with them possibly being the renowned craftsman, but we cannot say for certain if this was the true identity of the old stonecutter. But what we can say is that the legacy of the old stonecutter is still embraced by many today. One of the most photographed headstones in the world is credited to the old stonecutter, located in the King's Chapel Burying Ground in Boston. It is the grave of Joseph Tapping, which features a carving of Father Time, who is stopping death, depicted as a skeleton, from extinguishing a candle which sits atop a globe, the ultimate symbology for a headstone. On this headstone, you can also spot another characteristic we know to be common with the old stonecutter, which is the merging of certain letters. It's tricky to describe, but if you Google a photo of Joseph Tapping's grave and read the Memento Mori inscription also featured on the headstone, you'll see what I mean. Today, the iconic death's head symbol attributed to the old stonecutter, or possibly Elias Grice, is also a staple image in the Gothic, witchy communities and is very identifiable. Take a trip to Salem, Massachusetts, for example, and you will see this art in a lot of the oldest cemeteries there, and you'll find brands and shops like Witch City Wicks who feature it on some of their merchandise. You can also spot the death's head symbol in one of my absolute favorite shows ever, Over the Garden Wall, on some of the headstone art depicted in one of the last episodes. And if you go to sites like Etsy, you'll find plenty of other modern examples of artists today that are still creating products featuring the iconic skull with wings. Truly, the mark of the old stonecutter is still so prolific in the spooky communities today. So if you ever find yourself in New England, especially the Boston and Salem area, be sure to walk around some of the old cemeteries and you are sure to spot plenty of this beautiful, beautiful symbol. My main sources I used for this episode, and other sources if you want to learn more on the subject of early Puritan funeral art in New England, are all linked in the show notes below. Be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram at the Taphophile Diaries for photos and updates on future episodes. And if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to leave a rating or a review. That is the best and easiest way to support your favorite podcasts. I've also created a website and blog to go along with the podcast, so you can keep enjoying more bonus cemetery content in between episodes. And I now have a Facebook page you can check out as well and become part of this little Taphophile community. And don't forget to join me next time for episode 4 of the Taphophile Diaries. I'll even give you a little sneak peek this time. I'll be covering the story of an oddly well-preserved human body on display, which some believe can open and close its eyes on its own. This podcast is produced, researched, and edited by me, Ivy Boyd. Music is by Dimitri Terrace from Pixabay.